Hello and welcome to another episode of the CSI Football Podcast, where we embark on a forensic delve into a particular season of football, usually with a tartan tint. I'm your host, Ian Stephen, and for today's episode, we meet the first ever foreign goalkeeper and the first goalkeeper to be named Scottish Player of the Year. The winner of both the Scottish Cup and League Cup with Aberdeen, as well as a Dutch international, and holder of the title of the longest name in football history, it's Theodorus Antonius Gerardus Schnelders, or Teo for short. You sound like a Roman centurion with that long name, Teo.
Yeah, that's what the parents gave me, but I always keep it short and sharp, Teo.
Right, I'm going to hit you with a quiz question, okay? Let's see how good you are. There's only been two players playing for Aberdeen Football Club that have been nominated and received a vote from the Ballon d'Or. Who are the two footballers that have been nominated for the Ballon d'Or?
I mean, outside me, or because I know I was one?
Well, 1989, Teo Schnelders received a vote in the Ballon d'Or.
The other one?
Gordon Strachan.
Gordon Strachan, that
so
one.
You received, in 1989, you received the same amount of votes as Paolo Futre, John Barnes, Andreas Möller, Ronald Koeman, Thomas Hasler, and listen to this, Paolo Maldini. In 1989, you were exactly as good as Paolo Maldini. You should have a t-shirt, 1989 certified as good as Maldini. That is impressive.
Well, I didn't know it is, but sounds good.
Well, let's start at the beginning, Teo. Where were you born and brought up, and who was your boyhood club?
And I was born near Arnhem, Westerfors, small village. And started playing football when I was 8. And when I was 15, I was selected for the Dutch national, I think you would call it now under 16. And then was at the same time, Johnny van Schip, Ajax, Gerald Vandenburg, Ajax, they were picked. And in that year, Twente got me on the radar and asked me if I wanted to move to Twente, but I wanted to finish school first. And the year after, I was playing for the under 17. And I was quite amazed. If I look back now, I was the only player who played still for an amateur team, but it was captain of the team. And it was included Schanenburg and Frank Rijkaard and Van Schip. So I was in good company. And the year after, I went to Twente when I was 16. There I stayed with Dix for total 8 years when I was at Twente. And then I made a move and I was 24 to Scotland.
Well, were you always a goalkeeper?
I started as an outfield player, but that was quite soon I was interested to become a goalie because at our amateur club, there was a goalie who moved to professional football. And he was a goalkeeper, Johan Tucker. And he played with Paul Mason and the same team with FC Groningen. So from him, I started to learn the trade.
In Scotland, a goalkeeper is always somebody that's a bit strange. There's something not quite right. Is it the same in the Netherlands? Are goalkeepers very different from outfield players, do you think?
They always say there's two special players in the team. The goalie is daft and the left winger is special.
Well, when you were at 20, then Martin Joel was also there as well, wasn't he? What's your memories of Martin?
Martin, actually, when there was a few players who went later on to play in England, Martin was one of them because he went in 82, he went to West Brom. Romeo Zondervan went also to West Brom and was in the tie when Atkinson moved to Man United. Mm-hmm. He bought Remy Moses and Brian Robson.
Yep.
And I'm still friendly with the Romeo Zondervan. And I said, when you bought us replacements for those two players? But he said, no, there was a long time in between. But we had also Halvar Thoresen. He was the captain of Norway when they beat England, when the Norwegian commentator went berserk, I say in that, took a hell of a beating.
I can't
believe you know about Arnhem. Everyone's just, because Halvard, he was the captain of Norway, and he played for Twente.
Was he also an escape to victory?
Yes, because two players from Twente, Søren Lindstedt, was a Danish player, and there was the summer when that film was recorded. I moved to Twente. Mm-hmm. So when I met them, they had just finished the film, and they were having this old-fashioned haircut. They looked a bit strange to me. But they took part in that film.
Because I spoke to John Locke last year, and John was in it as well. So yeah, it's kind of strange how football is such a small world. There's also a young player breaking through called Theo Tenkaert. I don't think we'll hear any more about him. I think that's the last of we'll hear about him. Well, you were a player in 1983, so you'd have been aware of what's going on in European football. Were you aware of Aberdeen and Real Madrid at that time?
Yes, I followed it because I still remember watching. I didn't see the first leg, but I saw the second leg live on the German channel. And I still remembered jumping up and down in the room when Aberdeen scored the two goals in 2 minutes spell. And of course, I've seen the final and everything. I was well aware because in the summer, I think a few of the young boys had to play in an international tournament in The Hague. And Fergie, I think, sent even John Ewart there when Aberdeen played FC Twente youth team.
Cool. Scotland have only ever won one tournament, and that tournament was in 1983. And you also played in that tournament as well, the under-19s World Championships?
Yeah, it was in Mexico. Yeah. I wasn't picked the golden, but Menzo got injured. And I was just called there 2 weeks before the team traveled to Mexico. But I didn't play in the tournament. I was there. Here.
I mean, the players in that Dutch side that went over, I mean, they never amounted to anything. Nobody ever heard of Marco van Basten ever again. That must be, for me, van Basten in the 80s was like the ultimate striker. Is he just like another guy to you? You know him, he's just a friend?
Well, at that time, everyone is just going from amateur team to and professional side, and all of a sudden players are breaking through into the first team. I mean, it was also Keith Reichardt Gullit, who actually they were just a little bit older, but they already had first team experience just a year before myself. Van Basten came through the ranks, and Ajax was in a position where they had a 19-year-old Keith, who was European top scorer, but he knew, I have to move on because there is someone taking my place. And it was Van Basten. But yeah, you were young. Everyone is just like normal, like, you know each other just like friends.
Well, I'll mention some of the names from the Scotland squad. Brian Gunn was a goalkeeper who played and was a substitute keeper in Gothenburg. And his son's now the Scotland goalkeeper. Eric Black, who scored against Real Madrid. Steve Clark, who's now the Scotland manager. Ali Dick, who went on to play for Ajax. Brian McClair, who played for Manchester United. Paul McStay, who you would have played against Celtic. Gary Mackay, you would have played against him. So it was an impressive squad for Scotland. But from you being part of a youth set, I mean, from the 1970s onwards, the Dutch were famous for creating youth footballers, the Ajax system, etc. There must have been so many eyes on you as being the goalkeeper in that Dutch squad playing in a youth tournament. You must have had a lot of clubs start to become interested in you.
At that time, I was already at Twente, but when I played for the under-16, under-17, I mean, I was like Vitesse and Go Ahead. They were the ones I spoke to because Deventer was nearby, Enschede was also nearby. But Twente, for me, had the advantage. I knew players who played for the national team, and it was actually one or two players already training with the first team and making substitutions that they made minutes in the first team. So for me, it was like a bit of the same mentality, easy going and not going to the rest where it's a bit rougher. But PSV and Feyenoord, I got invitations as well, but for me, it was already clear. And the first contact, Twente, was the club where I wanted to go.
I'll speak to you from my perspective as an Aberdeen fan, but you're going to have to tell us, how did the move to Aberdeen come about?
Well, I was only 24. I played nearly, you know, I say like 200 games in the first team. And for a goalkeeper, it's quite a lot. Usually, because I played my first game for Twente exactly 1 week after my 17th birthday. And if you look back at the team who I played against, was in that team was Dikkels Foucault, Riva Gal were his partner in midfield. So I was really young, but I knew that if I wanted to make a move, at that time there was no Bosman ruling, and Twente could ask quite a bit of money for me. It was like, I think, 1 million guilders. And in the winter, Ton van Dalen, he was, before he was a technical director at Twente, but he moved, he became an agent. And I had still good contact with Ton, and I went to visit him in the winter break. I said, well, I would like to make a move. And I didn't hear a thing, but he was working on the in the backgrounds. He knew Fergie from his time as technical director at Twente. In 1980, Twente and Aberdeen played a friendly at Pretoria. And at that time, he wanted to sign the first goalie from Twente. But Ton said, no, I'm not going to sell him. I've got someone else. He'd been out on loan to lower division teams. That was Mark de Klerk. He sold Mark de Klerk to Aberdeen. And actually, he scored in his first game for Aberdeen against Barry Rangers from a goal kick. And so he went to Fergie, and he said, I got a good goalie for you, because he knew that Bailey was going to retire, or he wanted another goalie. He said, no, I'm going to sign Jim Layton, but I'll pass it on to Aberdeen. And they wanted to sign Kimball Money, but I think they asked £500,000 pounds for him. And so then they met each other again. And he said, do you have already a goalie? He said, no, not yet. Said Alex Smith to Fergie. So he gave him the card. And he, from there on, started rolling. Ton sent the tape over to Alex Smith. And they were really interested. So I went over to Aberdeen, have a look around in the city, and went to a camp in Largs, and it was quite a journey, because we made a few stops. First from Aberdeen to Broader Ferry, we stopped at Jockey Scott's house. He came into the car, then we stopped at Alex Smith's house in Stirling, and he put his dirty wash out, and then we drove to Largs. Then I trained there with Drew Jaffe and Jockey. And then after 2 days, we went back to Enschede, and Ton had a written offer from Aberdeen from £200,000 it was. And so then Twente said, no, we want 1 million gulden for him. And Ton said, you just go over to Aberdeen, everything will get sorted. If they know you're going, you're not coming to their training, they know it's business here, you want to move. And then we trained for 2 weeks, and then Ton came over again. And so Ton came in contact with Trent, and he says, I'd offer him now 925,000 guilders. And then they were wrong. Was this first we get an offer in pounds, now it's guilders? Well, is it a Scottish trick? But what happened, the pound had gone up in the 2 weeks' time, 25 or 30 cents. So it was still the 250. Holy, it was nearer the 900 than there was before. And so it was talking and negotiating, and then all of a sudden deal was done. And then after 2 weeks training with Aberdeen, I signed him, was an Aberdeen player.
So Fergie did Alex Smith a favour by referring you.
Yeah.
As the rumour goes, Alex Smith wasn't as kind to Fergie with somebody else. Alex was to watch on behalf of the Fergie while he was over. Well, if he knew with Paul Mason, Paul says that Fergie was very interested in him, and Twix Swift said, no, he's not good enough, and then signed him himself. So the two of you were kind of always linked. You were in the cup final sides together. You came over at the same time. Paul still regards you as a very good friend. I'm assuming you've got very good memories of Paul Mason as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like
what a journey it
became. I mean, I still remember that in between when it was over was the Piper Alpha disaster. And all of a sudden, Aberdeen was big, big news. And we stayed in the Apple Hotel. And I flew over for coming over to Aberdeen. At that time, my girlfriend, now my wife, Alex Smith, I spoke with the press, and he gave me the car keys. He says, "Yeah, my car is over there. If you just go over the car, I have still to pick someone up. It takes 10, 15 minutes. Then all of a sudden, I'm sitting in the car, and all of a sudden, the door opens. I see a Puma back with, and all of a sudden, his head came in. We played against each other, but we didn't know each other personally. I said, "Hey, Paul." And then we stayed for 3 months together in the Eiffel, and then bought the house same in the same street in the Broomall Avenue. I was 25, Paul was 67, so we were quite close to each other and played together for 5 years. And then over the years, his big dream was going to play in the Premier League, went to Ipswich. Then we lost touch a bit, and then it started in Burnaby. I got a touch again. When I retired from football, I went over to visit the family. We went over first to Southport and then went to Scotland to see friends again. And then all of a sudden, contact died a bit. And then around 2013, all of a sudden, Paul tried to get in touch. He went and came over to watch a game here. And then all of a sudden, it started to come again. You got invited for Q&A testimonial dinners from Andrew Considine. And then all of a sudden, more and more, and now it's nearly every year we see each other, might use once a year, mostly over in the UK. But you know, it's nice to meet up, and then you think, what a special time we had in Aberdeen, coming in at the same time, no one knew us, and then going away with such a great memories.
One thing that was very difficult for Aberdeen fans to accept was the fact that Jim Leighton had left. He was arguably one of the best goalkeepers in Europe at the time, Scotland international, and you had the job of filling his shoes. It's very, very difficult for a club like Aberdeen, a small club. They only get good players in small amounts. So nobody expected anything from you coming in. Who's Phil Snelders? Then you came out your first game and everybody kind of went, oh, he's quite good. Were you aware of Jim for coming over? Were you aware that you were always going to get compared to him because of the kind of status he had?
No. The thing is, if you want to make a career for yourself and you're focused on your own, game and getting better and better. But I remember jumping out when Alex Smith picked us up for the first time from the airport, going to the Tawdry, and we stopped there, and then someone walked past and he said, you must be a new goalkeeper. So yeah, if you're half as good as Jim Leighton, we're happy. And then IH went, and if he's better, no, that's not possible. That's not possible. And then looking back, and then in your first year, you win the Player of the Year awards, then you look back on that as, at that time, you didn't really appreciate it. It was just, well, up to the next thing, move on. But now looking back on that, it's like, when you think it's some achievements to go somewhere as a foreign player, people don't know you, low expectation, and then you win that kind of award that's actually chosen by the players. It's, yeah, makes it really special, and special the time in Scotland.
Jockey Scott and Alex Smith were co-managers when you came across. How did that relationship work? How did it affect you as a goalkeeper?
Alex Smith and, well, not so much. Drew Jaffe was always doing my warm-up. And later on also, because Tracy was coach of the under-21s, then he became also into the staff for the first thing of the training sessions. And he was really working a lot with the goalkeepers. And, all the amount of shots Drew did. We worked together, it's some amount, but Alex Smith was always the type of manager, like the people manager, seeing if you were doing okay. And Jockey was more the working relation. But it worked well. And it was always funny in the dressing room as well when the boss came in the morning, and then especially with Paul with his scouser's accent in there. And how are you doing this morning, Paul? I'm sound as a pound, boss.
Well, what did you find was the main differences between Dutch football and Scottish football in that first season?
And I must say, the atmosphere around football games, in the games, totally different game. Speed, sometimes, say Holland, if you were 2-0 up, I mean, it was just keeping possession and keep the ball and don't give much away. But in Scotland, they were still going forward. I remember my first game at Celtic Park, we beat them 3-1. And in Holland, if you were 3-1 up, I mean, it was just the last 15 minutes. I mean, it was easy. But here it was still. And the thing was also that there was no clocks in the stadium, so you didn't have a clue how long to go. But for the goalie, in one way, it doesn't make a difference because, yeah, your job is keeping the ball out of the net. And for a player, and left friends is like Paul, I can imagine that for him it's more difficult to adjust than for a goalie.
20-0. I mean, they're a big club, but the Netherlands is dominated by the big three, PSV, Feyenoord, Ajax. And in the early 80s, Aberdeen had effectively pushed themselves into Scotland's kind of triumvirate with Rangers and Celtic. Miller and McLeish, very demanding players. They'd set certain standards. Did you notice that as soon as you came in, that the pressure's on, we have to perform in every game?
No, I didn't feel it that way. The thing was that later on, I found out more like sometimes maybe better as well, that you don't know the players too well and you go with an open mind in there. But you could see you think back of the quality in the team. Keish Miller were internationals. Later on, Davy Robertson became international. Stu McKimmy became international. He had Roger Connor international, Jimmy Burton international, Charlie. And I mean, the amount of quality players who were there was amazing when you look back. But it was, the standard. And luckily later on, I mean, Paul became an important player. Hans Kilhuis became a very important player. So looking back, the Dutch market was really good for Aberdeen. Relative cheaply. Because when you look back, for the $500,000, they could have had Campbell money, but now they had Paul Mason and myself, the same amount. And then you win in the second year, you win the League Cup with Paul scoring 2 goals. Yeah, great memories about our debt and the quality of the team.
So when you won the Players' Player of the Year. Your performance was superb that season. I think every Aberdeen fan remembers it. There must have been interest from some of the bigger clubs in Europe, because Aberdeen wouldn't be the most expensive team to deal with. You were an incredibly talented player. You'd lineage with youth internationals, etc. Was there any interest? Was there clubs sniffing around at that point?
As far as I know, not. I don't think... No, never heard anything. I never had to think about. We were really happy then. When I signed a three-year deal, and then after 2 years, contract was renegotiated, and I signed for another 3 year again. But I was really happy. We were playing in a good team. So for me, I was really happy there. So I didn't have to think I want to move or the interest from a club. That I had to think about, is it the right time to move? No, at that time, it was like, you're there, you're happy, and then move on.
Your first season, Aberdeen's form was superb. Didn't lose a game until the 26th of November. Went on a League Cup run where Arbroath, Morton, Hibs and Dundee United dispatched, and you just joined the club and in your first hand-in final against Rangers. Disappointing, especially with the late goal from McCoist. And we all think Brinkle dived for the penalty. But what are your memories of that game?
Well, first of all, the noise. That was... I think that was the thing that stood out. And also, it was special. Playing a cup final, the first time. In the end, it was a great game, but if you lose, then it doesn't matter if it was a great game. But not nice to look back on, because it was the second one. I think everybody lost against Rangers in the League Cup. But most what stood out was the atmosphere at Hampden.
McCoist became a bit of a nemesis for you.
Yeah, and here the year after, he got the penalty.
That was a terrible dive.
But it was crazy. George Smith, I think he was a referee. But I still remember Jockey at half time. That he was really reading. Maybe the thoughts was, now we're doing well. And he was more or less getting in our mind, do you really want to win this game? He was really nice. What a finale it was, became extra time. And then Paul scoring. Because I remember Paul was telling me, because it was a couple of minutes before, he was a bit knackered. And then Jockey was always counting.
Where is Marcy?
That he had to be closer to Charlie. And then the long throw from Willem and flick on. Oh no, the long throw from Davy Robertson. Flick on from Willem. Charlie laid it off for Paul to drill home. Famous word. And from John Brown.
Well, you played your part as well, but the League Cup, Albion Rovers, Airdrie, St Mirren. Impressively, Celtic in the semi-finals. Difficult to get past Celtic in semi-finals in Glasgow, and then the final. But you played a pretty important part in that as well. You'd some good saves from Trevor Stephen, Ian McCall, and then McCoist twice in injury time. And one of the saves in injury time was stunning. It was like a reflex save. You'd no time to think about it. It was going in under the bar, and you managed to jump up and scoop it away. What were the celebrations like for you? Because not only had Aberdeen won a trophy, your first trophy, but you'd also played a huge part in that game as well.
It's quite funny when you think about it. I didn't notice it years later. Andrew Smith reminded me of it. He says, do you remember that you had the last touch from extra time from the first half? And the last touch of the ball in the second half. And in the second half was like the final whistle.
Yeah.
deep cross from Ray Wilkins, a lazy ball with the back post. And I knew Mucci was behind me, and I thought, I'm getting clattered here, but I just managed to get a hold of him, and Mucci was just steaming in, and he clattered the post. And so I had the ball, and he came past, he said to Terry, he said, you're okay? Yes, I'm okay. And then the next thing is, Heffley blows his whistle, and then holding up the ball up in the air and just putting it in the stands. And yeah, what a feeling that was. It's a great, great feeling.
And you wish he had kept the ball in. And think.
Well, the Scottish Cup, also that season, fantastic run. 6-2 against Partick Thistle, Morton, Hearts, Dundee United 4-0 in the semi-final, and then Celtic in the final. It wasn't a great final. It was very kind of defensive, but the first ever penalty shootout in Scottish football history. You saved a penalty, Anton Rogan, and it was actually a really good penalty from Anton Rogan. It wasn't a bad penalty by him. You got down really well, got your left hand on it, diverted it. Had you prepared for penalties at that point? Because they weren't as common as they are nowadays.
No, the thing is, I remember when we got to the final, then the games after, when Celtic got a penalty, I think I wrote it down, but I never actually thought by myself to take it with me and then have a look before the game, did I know who's taking the favourite corner. But there's no specialised goalkeeping coaches nowadays. Everything, there's no secrets anymore in football from the opposition. And the only thing was in my mind, one of the managers I had in the past, he always said from defenders and skillful and not so skillful players, I had taken across over their standing leg. So like Robin is a left footer, they'll put it in my left corner.
Yeah.
Because then you get a bit of more power. And I kept the philosophy like that. Even there, you could think, well, right footer is common. So for me, it was a right footer, I go to my right, a left footer, I go to my left. I don't know what the philosophy was from Boller, but that's the way I looked at it. I kept it that way. And then luckily, because you could win a penalty shootout and save a penalty, but pressure was on because we would have been next to take a penalty. And normally you would say to me every time we had to do the catching up, because we were after Celtic every time we had to take a penalty. The pressure was really on for the Aberdeen players at that time. Years after, then when Man United played Villarreal, and was exactly like the penalty shootout at Aberdeen Celtic was, that De Gea was the last one, and they were saved, and they lost the cup. So it could have also gone that way. So it was a special moment, still best moment in my football career.
One of the players in that team was Hans Heelhuis. You mentioned him earlier. He was a huge signing for Aberdeen because I think he was a Dutch international at that point. He was PSV Eindhoven striker. What was your memories of Hans joining the club?
Yeah, it's hard. Hardly to imagine that a player who a year before won the Champions League in 1988, they won against Benfica in the final. And the Olympic Games were, and PSV signed Romario. So Hans knew game time would be less, and wanted to sign him as well, but they couldn't afford the transfer fee. But Aberdeen, they ran for him, and what a signing. And he became for Aberdeen in such a short period. The boss, the owner, the Pimmer, big signing for Aberdeen.
It was a strange, the next season was a very kind of strange season for Aberdeen, a heartbreaking season for Aberdeen, 1991. Everything seemed normal, got off to a decent start, but then a game against St Johnstone, then Aberdeen lost 5-0, which was a massive, massive shock in Scottish football at the time. What went wrong in that game? Because it was such an outlier.
It was funny because I think it was only the few teams where we just travelled on the day of the game. And then the first thing was Alan was ill. I think he couldn't play. And then I think we were 1 or 2 nil down. And then Davy Robertson, I think, got sent off. And yeah, for them, everything went well. We tried to force it a bit, but we were so open at the back. But from that time on, it was also quite funny with the Scottish humour. After the game, and they asked, what's the time? Ah, it's 2:05.
That's cruel.
Cruel.
You ended up picking up a really bad injury that season, a very wet game against Rangers. McCoy slid in. I don't think McCoy had any malice. I think he was going for the ball, but caught you in the cheek, and it was a plate in your face you got, wasn't it?
And well, my cheekbone was just smashed, and well, first I was in the Royal Infirmary in Aberdeen, and they made a cut on the side of my head, and they pulled it back, and it was a Monday. I mean, I was even 2 days lying there, and my face, it was hard to recognize if your cheek is gone and your eyes closed. I mean, my teammates, they just walked past the bed. They didn't recognize me anymore. But the Monday night, I could see it wasn't right. So I phoned up to the doctor from FC Twente and said to him, I'm worried because this is, I have to go to a private clinic the next day. But they wanted to do a strange operation where they wanted to open the skull. And that seemed to me like a horror scenario. So I flew back on the Wednesday to Holland. And they put four small little plates in my cheek, through the eyebrow and under the eye, and through the mouth. And you could hardly... Nowadays, you can hardly see it, only when it's a bit colder. You can see a bit because you don't have the good circulation of the blood in your face. But looking back, it was like a horror injury. And looking at the eye socket was still intact. Yeah, it was not so nice.
But it looked, in the start of February, it looked like it was Rangers' title. It looked like Aberdeen were out of the picture. And then Aberdeen just went on this incredible run of form. Winning near enough every game, a draw against Dunfermline was the only drop point. And Aberdeen went into Ibrox knowing that a draw would give Aberdeen the title, but you were injured again, weren't you?
I was the day before hips, was 6 weeks before or something. I came home from training and said to my wife, looked like my shoulder popped in and out because I felt awkward. And so I took painkillers, and then the game starts and I got a little knock, a little bit disbalance, and I could feel my shoulder popped out. And what a pain that was. And yeah, anyone knows who popped out a shoulder, he never can play in 4 or 5 weeks again. I mean, it's takes much, much longer, especially for the goalkeeper. So I was out for the rest of the season.
A lot of Aberdeen fans will say that might be the reason why Aberdeen lost the game. Not to be disrespectful to Michael Watt, because he was a good goalkeeper, but the first thing Rangers did when Michael Watt was in goals at Ibrox was they punted the ball into the air and Haley absolutely clattered Michael Watt. I don't think he would have done that to you. I think you were too big and too experienced. I don't think he would have attempted it. But it was heartbreaking for Aberdeen to lose the title like that on the last day of the season. Was it equally hard for you because you were injured and there was nothing that you could have done, and you see all your teammates upset, you see the fans upset?
The thing is, years later, you realise what a chance it had been. At that time, it's just, yeah, life goes on. You got your injury, you want to be fit. And then as a football player, you don't look back actually in your career. It's more after your career, you think, could have been something. First year player of the year, second year, win two cups, third year, you're in the league. That's the thing what goes more on into your head after all those years there, right at the time.
Well, you have more Dutchmen joining you at Aberdeen following season. Peter van de Ven and Theo ten Cate joined. Were you like an unofficial spokesman at that point? Did you have Dutch players phoning you up saying, Aberdeen are interested, what can you tell me?
Actually, they didn't. Maybe they knew, because at that time was quite a lot of... Aberdeen was followed by the Dutch television and press, so the stories were already coming back into Holland that the Dutch players were doing well and they liked it over there. So they didn't, we didn't have contact before having with Theo. Ten Cate made it special because we had played together at Twente in the early 80s as well, and then seeing each other at another foreign club again. So that's, yeah, that was something special.
And you eventually had Alex Smith and Jockey Scott moving on. Willie Miller came in to replace Alex's manager. Was it weird having a former teammate become effectively your boss?
Yeah, it's hard to say, like, if something happens. I mean, as a football player, you're looking after your own business. And in the beginning, maybe it was a bit strange, but Willie was already retired for 1 or 2 years or something. So it was not that he was in the dressing room the year before and then all of a sudden going to the other side. He was already on the other side, but more with even the 21s. But the thing was that I looked at it. When I came to Aberdeen, Willie helped me. So when he became the manager, I wanted to help him. He had to also to become successful. That was more in my mind than looking at the thing. Well, strange. He was first in the dressing room, one of us, and now he's more or less our boss.
You certainly did help him that season. You did the most appearances for Aberdeen. You did 52 appearances for the club. Roy Eakin also came in that season as well. What was your memories of Roy? Because he's a very kind of colourful figure in Scottish football.
Yeah. Well, it was a bit straight away. One way a bit strange because he was like a assistant in the playing side. He was not changing in our dressing room, I think, no. So that's really strange. And I think he played also quite a few games as well. But yeah, I didn't know Roy personally. Yeah, we played against Celtic a couple of times when he was there. But I didn't know him, but it is strange. And I think nowadays that wouldn't work. I mean, if the players, if it's game day, he's more or less one of us. But during the week, he's one of the staff. So if players got problems, and if he comes in, everyone will go quiet. It's not that open anymore. So I think nowadays, this kind of role wouldn't work.
He also had another player joining, a certain Miksu Patalainen. He must have been absolutely delighted that you didn't have to go up for crosses against him anymore.
Yeah, Miksu. Big Miksu. Yeah, he was some size. Scored a lot of goals and finished international. Even for Aberdeen, he did quite well. The thing was, when he came, I think Aberdeen started to play another different style of football than before. I think more it was more like passing game. Now it was also, he had the outlet ball on Miksu.
Mm-hmm. It was a season of being a bridesmaid for Aberdeen that year. Lost to Rangers in both the League Cup and the Scottish Cup 2-1, and also second in the league as well. I don't know if Aberdeen have a right to complain too much because they're not a huge club, but could you sense that the fans will start to get a bit frustrated at times?
What do you mean by the performances?
You just the fact that they could never just put Rangers
fit. Yeah. Yeah, but at that time, the football landscape had changed. I mean, sure, everyone was like on a bit on the same level. And yeah, Rangers were spending millions to get new players. And yeah, for Aberdeen, it was like, yeah, all of a sudden, money rules. That was like nowadays what it is. And at that time, I think the change came a bit. That yeah, if you can spend money and buy quality players, then yeah, and the chance of winning something becomes bigger. If Aberdeen fans became frustrated by that, I really can't remember that, but of course it will win. It's not nice getting beat by the same team all the time.
One player who joined the club for a very small kind of cameo role was goalkeeper John Burridge. Do you remember Budgie?
I remember when he came in, yes. Because at that time I was already, I think, recovering in Holland. So I wasn't much around when he was there.
Remember when I asked the question of are goalkeepers daft? And the Netherlands, there's no dafter goalkeeper than Budgie. Aberdeen eventually had some pretty poor form. William Mullen moved on, Roy Aitken took over. The club just escaped a playoff against Dunfermline. I think they also lost against Dennis Muir in the Cup, which is a big shock. And your time with Aberdeen was kind of coming to an end at that point. What kind of facilitated your move out of the North East?
I must have been the season we nearly got relegated. I mean, at that time, everyone is worried. Supporters are worried. The club is worried. I'm worried because playing in the shoot, it looked like we were going really down because there was no thing you could say, well, if it pick up there at some points. So everything started working. And the thing was that Aberdeen already threw out a fish at Rangers, because by Rangers here, I don't think Aberdeen could have afforded the wages in the first division. And so then all of a sudden, Aberdeen, one of the members of the board, said to them, you should have asked Rangers, to my agent, Tom van Dalen. So they started to get something worked out. But then all of a sudden, Aberdeen stayed up. And they were starting, I think, with Cheers. And then Stephen Wright was going to Rangers. So they didn't want to sell another player to Rangers. And from there it was, I think for both sides, it was not nice. Because I thought he had indicated a price tag. I think Rangers wanted to pay £750,000. I mean, someone who had been there 7 years and then double the figure as well. But then it came to a stop and no one saying, well, if he's not allowed to go to Rangers, then he's got only 1 year left. Then they have to maybe try to give him a new contract. But it was going on and on and on. And then all of a sudden the Bosman ruling came. Then in the end of the season, could have gone for a free. And then all of a sudden Aberdeen said, well, you can talk to Rangers for the end of March or something. So it happens. The year in my life, the year we nearly got relegated. And everyone starting to make their plan. And then all of a sudden, it pulled out in saying, well, you're not allowed to go. And then I always, when I left, I said to the directors, well, let's thank you for the 7 good years and let's forget the last one. But still had a great time in Aberdeen. I mean, kids are born there and had a great, great time, but it was, well, in a sad way, how it ended.
If Aberdeen and Rangers played in the cup final this year, the Scottish Cup final, are you watching the television in red or are you watching it in blue?
Well, normally it's not so much Scottish football on Dutch channel, but then my heart goes more to Aberdeen because there's still a lot of people around at the club who I know and my feelings are most with them.
You joined Rangers partly because Rangers played quite a lot of European football. You played in the Champions League for Rangers. You could play against any team in Europe. You could draw Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich.
Was it a bit disappointing that it ended up being Ajax, one of the teams you played against them?
Well, when I signed for Rangers, there was the year before, I played Raith Rovers and Kilmarnock. And the next season, I knew one of the games, my first game would be, because the draw was made for the Champions League, would be Aberdeen or Ajax. It was always in my mind. And it happened to be Ajax on a Wednesday, and on the Saturday it was Aberdeen at home in October, really my first two games. And then after was Ajax again, I think a week. It could have been just a week. Ajax, Aberdeen, Ajax, something like that.
Well, you're also a Dutch international as well. You made your debut against the then Soviet Union in 1989. It's a heck of a team you were in. Koeman, Rijkaard, Vandenberg, Winter, Van Basten, Hulet. What are your memories of making your international debut for the Netherlands?
It was actually quite good because it was PSV Eindhoven, and PSV Eindhoven was always the club. If we played there with Twente, I always thought this is a nice club to play for. It's a bit of provincial club, but it's a big team where you can win prizes. So actually, it was in their stadium as well. And it was like the rehearsal of the European Championship final. I was already 6-7 months before. And when you think of the team as well, the Saev, think Kuznetsov, Hertz, Michalichenko,
Kutuzov.
Yeah,
it was basically Dynamo Kiev.
Yeah. Our great memories, you beat him 2-0 from Basel with a header, to Koeman with a penalty. So,
some important saves from Fios Neves. I watched the highlights. You had quite a few good saves in that game.
And Rats, he was great. His name tells already something, Rats. He was a cheeky player. He tried to do me in a near post with a cross.
Yep.
And I think a header from Protasov. Where I had to make quick feet movements, going to the middle, and then he heads it back to the direction where it came from. So I know I had a good feeling about that game. Yeah,
the Dutch have always had good goalkeepers, Van Brokkelen, Ed de Hoery, Van der Sar was coming through in the 90s.
Is that because I got, because Van Brokkelen was injured, and he played still till 19, I think the European Championship, I think, was his last tournament. But from the side and around, the Gooi, they were playing fine at Ajax. Yeah, I mean, when you look in 95, we were playing with Aberdeen playoffs to stay up. It was actually the day before the European final. Now, we played after you. It was Ajax against AC Milan when Kluivert scored a 1-0. So Van der Sar wins the Champions League. And I'm playing the next day, staying up in the Scottish Premier League. Yeah, that says it all. Yeah. But also paying for the wrong team to become a real international.
You made it into the World Cup squad 1994, though. I mean, you were still well thought of in the Dutch international setup.
Yeah, I was with Van der Gooi in the side. To America, I was the third goalie who was in the squad.
What are your memories of going to the World Cup? Because if you're the third goalkeeper, then you don't have to worry as much about playing. You can maybe relax more and take it in.
Yeah, but it's really, looking back, we just had a child who was just over a year. I mean, we were quite a lot away. I think in total we were 3.5 weeks to 4 weeks we were away from home. And I must say, it was really homesick because you had nothing to concentrate on. Where your mind was going to a game, it was just waiting. So the memories for a World Cup, it's nice to be part of it, but for me, I would say I didn't enjoy it because it was too long away from home.
And you eventually retired from football and you moved into the coaching side of the game. Tell us about your life after football.
When I moved from Rangers, I went to Maastricht, lovely city. Played there for 2 years. And then I was 37 and the last part I was injured. And I'm looking games 2,000, 2,500 in the stadium. And I'm thinking, I'm doing all this all week, working hard, get prepared for this. I mean, as I said to myself, I've read the book now and it's over and done. Body was creaking. And so I got asked to go back to Twente to start with the youth as a coach for the goalies. And then after 2 years, got offered a full-time job at the first team. And I did that for 13 years. And it was a really nice time. Twente was nearly bankrupt. And they went up. Steve McLaren came, finished second. Year after, first time in history, we won the league. Year after, we play with Michel Perdomo's coach. We played Inter Milan that won the Champions League against Bayern Munich, I think it was. And year after, first game is FC Twente against Inter Milan. So we play also Champions League. The year we should have won the league again, all the cup. And it was in 1 week time, we played Ajax for the cup, 2-0 down, won 3-2. A week after, it was like same with Aberdeen, called the Rangers, draw is enough. And we should have wrapped up the league already weeks before. And then we needed a point and lost again 3-1. So finished second again. And then Twente came in difficulties because chairman was throwing too much money to the players when wages was going sky high. And then Twente got nearly bankrupt, got relegated. And then now they're coming back to the nice level again by the Europa League. But I got retired 7 years ago now. This is my eighth season where I stopped at Twente, but I'm going to watch a lot of home games from Twente. They had a nice time. Nothing better than playing football yourself. A good substitute is to be a coach, to be a false, but you spend so much time that, the club rules your time in the weekends and, more or less had enough from it. Had a nice time. Book is closed and fallen, facing off on the sidelines.
So we've had one of your clubs in 20 win the league. So we just need Aberdeen to win the league for you as well. And as we're recording this, Aberdeen are currently top of the league and unbeaten. So it may happen, you never know.
Well, you never know. No, you're right. Maybe they can do a Leicester City one. That would be nice.
Well, I'm going to fire some fast questions at you. If you'll see how good your reflexes still are, okay? Who's the best opponent you ever played against?
Maradona. We were lucky with Twente. We always call it the forgotten game. And FC Twente is the only team who played a friendly game against a team from Maradona. Toon van Dalen, he was then at that time, he was still technical director. And he had really good contacts all of Europe. And with Twente in 85, he got invited for a friendly against Napoli. And actually, we played 0-0. They had it. It was a forgotten game. And it came back up to me when the Doku came out from Maradona. I was asked to go to the premiere from the film. And then all of a sudden, the memory came slowly back because no one ever spoke about that game. And then all of a sudden, the press came from everywhere. And then the day when he died was the same again. Articles in newspapers and magazines and radio.
Maradona
was amazing. If you see him, you think, never a player, but how good was he?
Scotland actually played Argentina in a friendly in 89, and Maradona couldn't play, he was injured. But do you remember who scored for Scotland and made Scotland work?
Yeah. I also remember the story. The first time he played at Hampden, I think it was 17
in May. Yep.
And then it was the ex-Aberdeen player, had a nice story about it. They had heard about this really good player, Maradona, but then they looked in the tunnel, he was only a wee guy, and they thought that he was a mascot. And then he was saying, I've got his name, he's an ex-Aberdeen player.
Bucking maybe?
Yeah, no, it was someone else. And he said, look, thinking more or less from all the best, because you get kicked on the Scottish way.
Yep.
And then his first game as a manager from Argentina was also against Scotland.
Your knowledge of football is unsurpassed, Hugh. Who's the best teammate you ever had?
Brian Laudrup, Jim Bett.
The best save you've ever made.
The funny thing is, no one, my teammates will remember it, but it must be one of against Maradona, a volley, where I just got a hand to it and touched it, and it then just top of the bar and over.
The correct answer was the penalty against Celtic.
You can't let them.
What's the best stadium you've ever played at?
Cool. Yeah, just because I've been speaking about Naples, that was something special. I remember it was the first time, it was 2021 or something, first time that we were actually with a bus went actually into the stadium. And it was a long walk to get to the shield. You had to go steps up. And then we were going onto the pitch. You could see the other end. It's half a minute later, all the Bengal fireworks were on. And it was, I didn't see the goalie the first half because there was so much smoke around in the stadium. And yeah, I must say that was, yeah. Yeah, one of them, well, also Hampden Park, but at Naples or something, that was special because of Maradona.
What's the funniest moment you've experienced in football, your funniest memory, the thing that makes you laugh the most?
You mean what happened on the field or just
anything in football that brings a smile to your face?
When we had a player, he played for Middlesbrough, Billy Ashcroft. He made a really bad tackle on someone you could have said, well, that could have been close to a red card. And the thing he realized as well, he went quickly to the player. He helped him up and he cleaned his shorts. And I think the whole stadium was laughing. The players were laughing. The referee was laughing. And don't think he got the yellow card for it. It was quite funny, Billy. And he was a good, because he was a close friend from Tommy Cooper.
Okay.
And we went once to a program on the Dutch television where he did an act from Tommy Cooper on the Dutch television. Billy was great. He was great humor.
Well, that brings us to the end of another episode of the CSI Football Podcast. We have to thank Teo Snelldoes, our first ever Ballon d'Or nominee, exactly as good as Paolo Maldini in 1989. Join us next episode for another forensic journey into the annals of Scottish football. Thank you very much, Teo.
You're welcome.